Hello, and welcome to Onk Live On Air. I'm your host today, Jason Harris. Onk Live On Air is a podcast from Onk Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onk Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Amar U. Kishan, MD, the Vice Chair of Clinical and Translational Research and Chief of the Genitourinary Oncology Service for the Department of Radiation Oncology at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA and the UCLA Johnson Comprehensive Cancer Center. Dr. Kishan joined us to discuss the use of magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, guided stereotactic body radiotherapy in prostate cancer. He was lead author for the Phase 3 MIRAGE study, which showed that the use of MRI-guided SBRT resulted in a significant reduction in acute genitourinary and gastrointestinal toxicity compared with standard computed tomography-guided SBRT. Overall, results indicate that MRI-guided SBRT allowed for tighter planning margins, thereby facilitating a reduction in both physician-reported and patient-reported bowel and bladder toxicities. Dr. Kishan, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Obviously, we want to talk about the MIRAGE study. So do you mind, can you just walk us through your methods and your results?
Sure. So the MIRAGE trial was a single center randomized trial where we compared standard of care, what we call CT-guided SBRT for prostate cancer, versus MRI-guided SBRT for prostate cancer. And it's fairly technical, so I'll get a little bit into the details. Basically, when you're treating prostate cancer with any form of external radiation, you need to account for the fact that there are some uncertainties in radiation delivery. So obviously, we design radiation to precisely target the prostate, but we need to account for the fact that the prostate is a moving target. It sometimes isn't easily imaged on CT or X-ray, and we need to bring in other imaging modalities. And so traditionally, what we have done is we put these markers into the prostate that show up on X-ray because the prostate itself doesn't show up as well on X-ray or CT. And we kind of rely on those markers as an indirect ability to track the prostate, both as it moves from day to day and between radiation treatments. With SBRT, this is a high dose per day treatment where we are able to condense a radiation course for prostate cancer from, say, 39 to 45 treatments all the way down to 5 treatments. So in that situation, we're delivering 5 high energy, high dose, you know, fractions of radiation, you need to make sure you're accurately hitting the prostate. And so instead of just targeting the prostate, we target the prostate with kind of a margin around it. That way, if the prostate is moving, if there's any uncertainties, even like a millimeter change in setup or design on any given day, we make sure we're hitting the target. That's the goal number one. You also want that margin to be as tight as it can be while safely hitting the target so that you reduce dose to the bladder and the rectum, which are nearby, obviously, and other structures like those blood vessels and nerves that may be involved with erectile function as well. So again, when we're doing standard of care CT-based SBRT, we put these metallic markers into the prostate. Those metallic markers are easily seen on an X-ray, which we have readily built into standard radiation delivery devices. We target the prostate with this 4 millimeter margin around it, and we deliver our treatment. Now, an MRI allows you to see the prostate better. And every man with prostate cancer, their family knows this, physicians know this, because when we get an MRI to help map out and stage the prostate cancer, we get an MRI to help plan surgery for prostate cancer. It just gives you better anatomical detail of the prostate itself. But historically, we haven't been able to combine a linear accelerator that delivers radiation with an MRI because of magnetic interference. So that's where the MRI-guided radiation piece comes in. These are newer entities, newer devices that allow us to have an onboard MRI that's operational during the radiation. So instead of a patient getting treated kind of with guidance based off of X-rays or what we call cone beam CTs, which are similar to kind of dental panoramic CTs that people are familiar with, we actually are delivering the treatment inside the bore of an MRI, and that MRI is on during the treatment. With that, you're actually able to set up the treatment a little bit better because the MRI gives you better kind of resolution when you're trying to align things at the time of the treatment. And maybe most importantly, it has what's called a Cine MRI. It's getting an MRI image 4 times per second and stitching that together to make kind of a real-time monitoring of the prostate. If the prostate moves too much, the beam will actually automatically turn off. That allows us to be confident that we can hit the prostate, but not need a 4 millimeter margin, but rather a 2 millimeter margin. And so what this trial looked at is, well, we have this newer device, we can do 2 millimeter planning margins. And then we have the standard of care, which is still advanced technology, still precise, but that's a 4 millimeter margin. And what we wanted to see is, well, we're reducing these margins by 50%. And it sounds like not that much, 2 millimeters, but this is high value real estate. As I explained to patients, you have the prostate right there, then the bladder, the rectum. So these millimeters matter. The question is, could we reduce side effects? Specifically, we designed the trial to look at urinary side effect as the primary outcome, but we also looked at physician-reported bowel toxicity, as well as patient-reported outcomes. And so that's what the trial was, a patient that came to UCLA that wanted to get this 5-day course of radiation. We randomized, they either would get the standard of care CT-based approach with the markers, or they would get treated on the new device, the MRI-guided device. And I guess the bottom line is what we saw was a significant reduction in acute grade 2 or greater, which is moderate or greater urinary toxicity. So that was the primary endpoint of the trial. It was reduced from 43.4% to 24.4% with the MRI guidance, the tighter margins. Acute grade 2 or greater bowel toxicity was reduced from 10.5% to 0% with MRI guidance. And we also saw significantly less symptom burden as interpreted by patients. We gave them questionnaires to fill out to kind of give us an idea of how much urinary symptoms and bowel symptoms were bothering them. And so we gave people something called an International Prostate Symptom Score, or IPSS, to look at the burden of urinary symptoms. That scale, by the way, is 0 to 35 points. And, you know, 0 to 7 points is mild, and then moderate and severe symptoms. We said if someone gets a 15-point increase on that scale, that's a significant burden of symptoms. That proportion of patients getting that type of significant symptom burden was reduced from 19.4% to 6.8%. Similarly, with bowel, we gave patients something called the EPIC 26 questionnaire, which asked some questions about bowel bother and symptoms. There's well-established thresholds for what's a clinically detectable and then a clinically significant decrease in outcomes. When we looked at that, there was a 50% rate of clinically significant bowel function bother with CT-guided SBRT. That was dropped to 25% with MRI-guided SBRT. So key takeaway was that this much tighter planning margins that was allowed and facilitated by the new device led to less physician-reported and patient-reported bowel and bladder side effects.
Was that as much a function of, obviously you're getting better targeting, so there's more organ sparing, but also, like you said, it turns off when the prostate moves, so the patient is just getting less off-target radiation in general?
That's a great question, and most likely that is the case as well. That is something that we are looking into, kind of looking back at all the motion traces and kind of seeing in what patients is there excess motion, or, you know, how frequently is it turning off. But I think clearly that is playing a role, because when we look at just the, you know, planning differences, like if we just compared a CT-based plan to an MRI-based plan, there were some differences in bladder dose, but they weren't extremely dramatic. But the difference we saw in toxicity was very robust. And so likely, as you're saying, it's not just the fact that it's a tighter margin, but maybe also the fact that we're able to turn off the beam, limiting off-target radiation.
Obviously, your study wasn't looking at survival, but have there been results asking that question? And do you know what the results were?
This is the first, and to my knowledge, only randomized trial that's looking at kind of whether this machine improves outcomes or not. And so, no, it's too early to look at survival data from this study. But I think what we're getting at is, you know, is that margin too tight? You know, the 2 millimeters, is it too tight? And we feel that that's very unlikely to be the case, like highly unlikely to be the case, because of the targeting, right? We are tracking the prostate itself as it is moving back and forth. And so if the prostate was moving out of the field, the beam would turn off and would only turn back on either manually or if it kind of immediately came back into field. So we do know that the prostate is being accurately targeted. it was essentially almost impossible that there was a miss in this group, the MRI guided group and the experimental group. In the control group, because we don't have that real-time feedback, there it is more possible that something could have been outside the field when the radiation was delivered. However, that is a standard of care option that in other studies has been, you know, looked at aggressively and with longer-term follow-up. So I don't think there is likely to be a significant outcome difference in terms of survival and cure rates between the two groups. The standard of care arm is a standard of care that's thought to be highly effective. I think more likely what we're looking at here is the potential for just reduced toxicity while maintaining the efficacy of the treatment.
So your study is the first looking at MRI-guided radiation treatment in prostate cancer. Has this been explored in other tumors?
It has been explored in other tumors. And in fact, the bang for your buck arguably it might be higher even in some other tumors where the standard of care is just not as good. In prostate cancer, the standard of care with CT-based treatment is already very good. It's clearly a good option for a lot of patients, and we're trying to improve the bar. But there are cancers like pancreas cancer, pancreatic cancer, where it is extremely difficult to get a high dose of radiation in there because the critical structures nearby move, they change shape. Toxicity there is not just going to the bathroom more frequently, although that can affect patients a lot, but it could be a fatal bleed of an ulcer in the duodenum or something serious like that. In those contexts, having this really tight radiation delivery might even be more favorable. We're talking about avoiding serious toxicities, maybe being able to deliver radiation someplace that we otherwise never would even try treating. So I think the other area where this is being explored very aggressively is in the setting of gastrointestinal malignancies, particularly pancreatic cancer, maybe for liver metastases as well. The liver is also highly mobile. In the setting of genitourinary cancers, almost analogously would be kidney cancer, where there's a upswing and uptake in possibly treating patients that can't get surgery with high dose radiation as well. And there, the kidney is a mobile target. You want to try to maximize the dose you can get in. I think this machine, the MRI guided technology, poses an advantage there as well.
I would think that brain cancer would be an attractive target just because you do want to spare those other tissues.
That's a good point too. I think in the context of brain cancer and you know, for something terrible like a glioblastoma multiforme, that is being studied potentially whether actually having an MRI on board can help tailor the treatment fields. There's a large federal funded grant, I believe, that went to a program that's looking at this. It's a little bit different because there the target isn't moving and the anatomy itself isn't changing, but you may be able to visualize tumor response in that context. And that could also be valuable. Do you need to deliver a higher dose of radiation because it's not responding, or can you tailor things differently? So that would also be an interesting application, but it's a slightly different twist because we're not looking at the motion and the targeting as much, but rather maybe some kind of a functional readout during the course of radiation.
Are there patients for whom this would be contraindicated who wouldn't be eligible for MRI-guided therapy?
Yeah, so there are some contraindications to MRI-guided radiotherapy, which, as you might imagine, are tied to the ability to get an MRI. So if somebody has a pacemaker that cannot be turned off, they're not cleared by their cardiologist to have it turned off to get an MRI, they can't get an MRI-guided treatment because we wouldn't be able to use the MRI part of it. If someone that has shrapnel in their body and they can't get an MRI for that reason, you know, the same thing applies. That's very rare. I do treat a lot of patients with prostate cancer, and there have maybe been one or two of the multiple hundreds that I've treated that just cannot get an MRI for those reasons. Maybe a little more common would just be claustrophobia. An MRI can be uncomfortable. Sometimes patients can power through the test of getting one MRI, you know, for a diagnosis or something, but the idea of going in multiple times for treatments when there's an option of doing it without it can be hard to swallow. So I'd say that's slightly more common to be a reason that someone might decline this treatment. At the same time, we try our best to help patients get through it. There are medications we can prescribe. It is in a clinic setting to try to get patients through it. So there are some contraindications, but they're pretty limited.
For patients who are claustrophobic, would an open MRI be an option?
Unfortunately, not with this technology. So specifically here, we looked at the ViewRay Meridian linear accelerator. There are other linear accelerators that are MRI guided as well, but none of them have an open MRI feature. So unfortunately, no, you do have to go inside of the bore.
Dr. Kishan, is there anything else that you would like to add that I didn't bring up?
With prostate cancer, we know that cure rates are very high. And so one of the primary focuses of research interests globally and within my program and our institution as well is to try to reduce the side effects of the treatment. People are living for a long time after their diagnosis and treatment, which is great, but we want to make sure they're living without toxicity. And steps like this, reducing the margins, more accurate treatment, trying to drop toxicity, I think are steps in the right direction.
Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks so much for your interest in the article.
That's all we have time for today. Thanks again to my guest, Dr. Amar Kishan, and thank you for listening to this episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Onc Live is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Onc Live and at Onc Live SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Onc Live and Onc Live State of the Science Summit, and follow our Onc Live page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of Onc Live On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onc Live On Air.